everybody.
Welcome to another episode of What's in the Box, where we talk about what we're playing in Cube and what you should be trying out in yours. I'm one of your hosts, Quad Nines, or Drew.
What's going on, everyone? My name is Zakeel, and welcome back to What's in the Box. The last episode came out, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think it was the end of last month, yeah.
Yeah, around there. Good 3 week break, and it's always good to be back talking Cube with everyone. We actually do have a couple channel announcements I'm going to take care of right now. As of this recording, you can now find our podcast on Stitcher. We are currently in the process of applying for a Spotify application, so you'll be able to find it there. So currently you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, I believe SoundCloud will be coming soon, and then we'll probably put it up on YouTube on either one of our channels. And then additionally, we have a What's in the Box MTG Twitter handle, which is WITB_MTG on Twitter. Follow that. I'm sure we'll do a bunch of crack-a-packs and giveaways in the future and all that. But other than that, what's new? What's been going on?
Well, I've been making the hard decisions here lately. I've been trying to cut my cube down a little bit and picked up a few new cards from the sets and whatnot, the most recent sets, and actually got to do a cube draft a couple weeks ago, so that's a little different, but been enjoying the Battle Bond, the preview season and all that was pretty good. There's a few pretty cool cards in there, and I don't know, just been not playing much Magic, but fairly interested in it, so.
No, absolutely. Out of curiosity, how often do you get to cube draft, would you say?
Well, if I go to a GP, like we make cube three times in the weekend, but outside of a GP, like maybe four or five times a year. So,
yeah, it's probably, I was going to say it's actually pretty similar for me. And it's like seasonal. I think certain times I'll get to maybe cube on like a weekly basis for a couple weeks just because of my schedule and that just recently moved and all that stuff. But I don't. I mean, I've cube drafted a couple times this year, but I haven't been able to draft my own cube since the new year, I think, which is kind of disappointing, honestly, but I guess that's just how it goes.
Yeah, it seems to be that way. And it's funny because, like, through Twitter and stuff, followed and talked to some people like a state away, you know, an hour away, something like that. And every time we try and get together for a cube draft, or something, they'll have to go out of town or just can't go to whatever event I'm going to. So it's definitely not as much cubing going on as I'd like, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know that like White Wolf and Usman, shout out to them. They get to cube fairly often. I think their play group, you know, probably lives where they do and all that. I know for a fact Usman on a weekly basis has his like whatever ping to see anyone in the local area wants to cube with him. If only I lived in
St. Louis. Makes me sad that I don't get to cube there. So I've actually ran into Anthony twice at GPs, and either I was leaving or he had to leave, or like it was the week he had his like apartment broken into and I was half his Magic card stolen, you know, so it's never been good timing with us. But hopefully one day, you know, there's a GP Atlanta coming up this winter, so hopefully a bunch of us can get together and have a cube all weekend. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, man, I have a pending reservation for that. We'll see. I'll be able to make a firm commitment in the near future, but I also may jump in. We'll see. And then another quick announcement as regard to our future schedule. We would like to probably record, I would say, at least twice a month and put out good content. I edit the cast myself, and we produce, obviously, our own content. It's just both of us. But I don't ever want to feel pressured to make a weekly podcast episode just to make an episode, especially with cubing, because it really varies on experience and kind of new cards. The formats are, for the most part, you know, I don't want to necessarily say solved, but, you know, the strategies and all of that are certainly out there. But I want to try to just make it somewhat of a commitment to everyone to just say, if we can get two good casts a month, you know, I'd be very happy with that. So as far as expectations, kind of, I guess that's what everyone can look out for. But other than that, in terms of Magic, So we actually have two topics tonight. The first one and our recurring segment will be What's in the Box, the name of this podcast. We're going to talk about new stuff, new pickups, and our crack-a-pack. And then additionally, our first topic is going to be the Card Kingdom Starter Cube, which just came out. Is a great product released from Card Kingdom and has a amazing it's an amazing introduction for the format for only $99, and then cube guideline conversation. We're going to talk it once again about powered versus unpowered, planeswalker counts and guild counts. You know, how many cards do you allocate for each one? How many planeswalkers do you allow, and so on and so forth. But to just starts off, what's in the box? In terms of Magic, anything new in terms of changing your cube or pickups or anything like that?
Well, like I said, I've cut down. I was up around 560, I think, because at the time I was thinking I wanted a 540 cube and then an extra few cards for, like, the conspiracy card that adds a pack to the cube and booster tutor. You know, somebody, we usually do 8-card pack for booster tutor. So I wanted to have a few extras, but we never have that many people draft it. So I'm trying to cut back to 450. So it's been a lot of tough cuts. Talk about some of those a little bit, but I'm adding stuff like from the new sets, like Dauntless Bodyguard that I hadn't picked up yet. It's coming in, I think, tomorrow. A little package coming in. It's going to be like Christmas. I just picked up Ramunap Excavator, Hostage Taker, Growing Rites of Itlock, Ravenous Chupacabra, which I hadn't, because I've opened some in draft, but like I want a full. So
yeah, that card.
But yeah, just cards like that that have been added to most cubes in the last set or two. Just I haven't got around to updating, so I'm getting all those updates done.
Yeah, so I don't play standard anymore, and I saw that printed whenever that was a couple months ago, and it's like, how did this get through R&D? Like, I mean, like, for years, there was always some kind of drawback, either being non-black or non-artifact or something, and now it's just straight up just kill something, and...
But is it better than Shriekma? I still say no.
You're probably right. You're probably right with the terms of Shriekma. Necrotal, I think, is probably outclassed, although I believe that card has first strike, right?
Necrotal does. I'd still like it better than Necrotal. You're right. So like, in a fight, of course, Necrotal wins, but I don't think Necrotal can kill Chupacabra. Cuts down. So, yeah. I don't know.
But anyway, for me, I'm just looking here quick. We were talking before the cast. Of course, as cube owners, you kind of are, you know, you monitor that you're looking at a lot of high powered cards, and you can either do it through proxy or you can do it through paper or real, or I know some people do online cube drafts with the Moto Cube, and they kind of, you know, draft through online and then just trade the cards. And of course, Cockatrice is always an option, but a quick stop off at MTG Finance Town. What the heck is going on, man? We were talking about duels. Duel lands have gone through the roof. All kinds of old legends and antiquities and who knows what going on. I do not envy the person that is building their cube from scratch in 2018 because...
Anything reserved list or
$600?
Small print run, like the first run of foals, even if they're not reserve list. It's just... people are just going down the list, just buying stuff, and you know, just buy stuff and buy out. That's what you can call it. So like, either they're buying out to try and make money, or they're scared that there won't be around. It's going to keep going up. So it's just people are jumping on stuff. The Pro Tour coming up. That's the team multi-format that Legacy is included in. I mean, there's a lot of people trying to qualify for that through, like, I think, you know, the different PDQ formats and stuff. And so a lot of people are having to pick up dual lands. Also EDH, people are scared they're going to miss out, that they're trying to get the dual lands for their decks that they have. And they're not printing any more of them, so they say. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was thinking about some of the other... So I was reading some of the podcasts or some of the blogs and listening to some of the other casts. And it's interesting because I think the majority of dual land pressure doesn't actually come from Legacy. I think it probably comes from Commander the most, just because that's a huge population and the majority of people who are playing Legacy probably already have those cards. But I mean, just as a whole, man. I mean, it's pretty nuts. I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean about, like, they probably have them, like, there's a few people that might be changing decks here and there, but like you say, most people have that stuff, unless it's, you know, newer people trying to get a team again, they realize, oh, wait, none of us have functioning Legacy decks. But like you say, it's probably mostly a Commander, just because when people decide to make a new Commander deck, 9 times out of 10, they don't take their last one apart and, like, for parts, they just get new cards. Like, they need a new Soul Ring every time. They need a new dual land every time, just about. So, g'day.
Well, and it was a good point that came up that, in Legacy, the format is very blue, you know, and black heavy, right? You're going to have a lot, like, Underground Sea is the most expensive because it's the best in Eternal formats. But in EDH, the dual land pressure is kind of stretched out across everything. Like, Plateau is actually relevant in that format. Plateau hasn't seen play in Legacy in, like, years. Like, you know, in terms of optimally, at least. With regards to, you know, the rest of the dual lands as a whole, like, EDH certainly puts a lot of pressure on that. But, you know, and dual lands, you know, if you kind of go back to some of our older episodes with Anthony and stuff, just talking about kind of how prices have evolved, dual lands are essentially the kind of standard for Eternal formats. Like, they are really the pillar and the most important cards in Magic. You know, a lot of people will point to Power, but the reality is Power doesn't actually influence that, like, that major of a percentage of the player base, whereas dual lands are so common, just, you know, in everything outside of competitive play. I guess mostly just Commander, but Commander makes up, I don't even want to know what percentage of the player base, because it's such a good format. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like, some people play Legacy, don't play Standard. Some people play Modern, don't play Legacy. A large, large amount of people play Commander, and that doesn't keep them from playing the other formats. Because, I mean, I don't know, because you can, like, almost, if you walk into a shop and you have an EDH deck, you can find a game, where that's the same is not true for Legacy. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, with that said, I'm happy to be a cube owner in terms of value of appreciation with regards to monetary value, but also it kind of pains to see you know, that happen in terms of cube development. You know, that it is what it is. We, you know, I remember people not wanting to buy Underground Sea at 185 years ago, and we're here we are now. But that's a different conversation for a different show. But let's jump into any other new pickups. I think you were telling me before the show that you got a nice package in the mail of some other stuff.
Yeah, it's coming in, I guess. Like I said, it's Remnant Excavator, Hostage Taker, Dauntless Bodyguard. It's, like I said, it's the update for the back to, I think, Omnicat, pretty much. The stuff had missed, like Kite Self Rebooter. I was kind of waiting for it to dip, and it never did, so I just went in and picked up. Mm-hmm. A Direfleet Daredevil. I'm excited to try that one out. People like White Wolf have been real big on it. The Charter Course, which I was very hesitant on, because, you know, it's a blue card. Like, what am I going to cut for this? But everybody's been playing it and haven't cut it since it came out, so I'm going to give it a shot. Let me see, what else? A card I should have had in the queue for a while, a Braid. Just because all the good artifacts, it's just, I mean, I don't like it because it's a, to me, it's a bad burn card because it can't go to the face. But considering a lot of times red is a support color, you know, it's very versatile in that case because you can kill a creature, kill artifact. And I've got some pretty good artifacts in my cube to kill, so it makes a little bit of sense that way.
It annoys me that full art promo isn't foil.
That's actually what I'm putting in. I like I said, I like the art, you know, full art's pretty sweet, but yeah, if it was full, it'd be way better.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, so let's do, you want to do a crack a pack?
I think that'd be fun. Sure, yeah. Sure. What, whose cube did you want to go with? You want to go with the...
Let's actually go with the Card Kingdom starter cube. That'll be the main topic of our thing.
Yeah, and actually, I was looking...
I have it up. Did,
I realized, and I heard, Chris Van Meter doing a podcast. It's actually the third iteration of it, but this is the first time they've kind of advertised it as much, I guess, like kind of put it out there. And then I got to think about it. I did remember something about them having a cube product, but like, I couldn't find a list for it anywhere. And this is the third iteration that he came up with, and it was, like, the list was easy to find. Like I said, it's promoted more, and it looks like a pretty good list. So I'm for a Star Cube, especially.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And so this is V3. You can find this list on CubeTutor.com. The cube number is 105778. The best thing about this is Cube is a format in which you get to design the environment that you want. And as a starter cube, this is going to have the framework of all of the different archetypes in Magic, all the different strategies that you can support. And if you start here, you can then tune your cards, you know, and tune your format and tune your cube to what you would specifically like. And it's a 360 card cube. It has, obviously a big assortment of creatures. It's not limited to rarities, so there are some, you know, kind of rarer rares and mythics. You know, they're not necessarily the most optimal cards, but they're certainly strong, and every card in here is pretty good. So I really do enjoy it. This is a great product, and we'll see. Maybe in the near future we can work on giving one of these away. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like I said, it's a lot of cards that, but most of them are kind of recent, but some of them aren't, and it's just there's a lot of staples in there, and it's pretty easily upgradable. And it's pretty balanced, too. I've drafted a few times already on CubeTutor, and it seems like you can go like four or five different archetypes that are all pretty balanced.
All right, so let's get to the Crack-A-Pack here. Would you like to do it, or I can do it, either or?
Let me pop it up here.
I'll actually have you do it.
All right. Okay. Let me see. Card one, and it's actually updated through Dominaria, because I already see a legend here that doesn't look too bad. But first card is Catacomb Sifter.
Ooh.
It's one green, one black green, 2/3 devoid. When it comes in, it makes a 1/1 Scion. You can sack that for mana, of course. And it says whenever another creature you control dies, scry one. So there's some combo type stuff with that.
I actually remember talking about that when that came out. That was like one of our early casts. It's that card has somewhat of a value engine for an uncommon.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
And the second card is Danitha Capuchin Paragon. It's the 3-mana 2/2 out of the new set. First strike, vigilance, lifelink, and aura and equipment spells you cast cost one less to cast. It's a human knight, which is kind of relevant in some cubes. Let me see. Third card is Manalith, a little bit more of a basic card. 3-mana mana rock that taps for any color. New Horizons, another 3-mana card. It's an enchantment out of Ixalan. When it comes into the battlefield, you may put a +1/+1 counter on a creature you control, and the land, oh, it enchants a land. Kind of left that part out. The land you enchant can tap for 2 mana of any one color. Then there's not one of the best dual lands, but Thornwood Falls is one of the gain life lands. Comes in tapped. It taps for Simic, green or blue. Then we've got Lightning Strike, a card that's, you know, in a lot of cubes, or at least some form of 2-mana deal 3. Yeah. Core Hookmaster. It left my cube a while back, but it's still pretty good. It's a good tempo card. 3 mana. It's 2 and a white for a 2/2. When it enters battlefield, you may tap a creature an opponent controls, and it doesn't untap during the next untap step. Next card is Seeker's Squire. 1 and a black, 1/2 from, it's an X line. It's a human scout. When it enters the battlefield, it explores, which I found to be a pretty good mechanic in just any limited format. Next card is Torch Fiend. 1 and a red for 2/1 devil. And it's got red, sacrifice it, destroy an artifact. Let's see. The 10th card is Elite Scale Guard. Can you tell me what this card does just by the name? It was a bomb limited in that con block format.
I'm thinking, give me 2 seconds. When it enters the battlefield, you bolster 2/1/2.
Correct. 2.
That's,
bolster
and
2.
Then there's something to do with 1/1 counters and like tapping or untapping or something like that.
whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it attacks, you tap target creature defending player controls. It's a five mana 2/3. So the stats don't seem real good, but then if you ever have counters on it and you start attacking, like, they just can't block. They just take it.
I remember this card. It's because of, yeah.
It was one of the Mythic Uncommons, as they called it. Let me see. Next card is a classic Disfigure. One black mana for target creature gets -2/-2. So end of turn, it's instant. Been in a couple sets. Most recently, Magic 25, actually. Okay, here's one that's pretty much a stinker, but Memorial to War out of Dominaria. It's red land, enters tapped, and you can tap for red, or you can pay 4 and a red to tap, sack it, to destroy target land. So pretty much the worst strip mine ever. Not a fan of that one, but that's okay. Tragic Slip, which is, I think, just better than Disfigure. And two more black cards to end pack.
Yeah,
Duress. I'm not going to read Duress. Everybody knows what Duress does. And Dead Reveler. Can you tell me what Dead Reveler is?
I actually cannot. I cannot.
Believe it was from Return to Ravnica. The Rakdos card. I mean, even though it's just black, but it was from the Rakdos card.
Is Rakdos from that? It probably has Unleash.
It does. It's a...
And is that it?
It's a 3-mana 2/3 zombie with Unleash. So, yeah. It usually comes in as a 3-mana 3/4 that can't block, so it's not the worst. What are you taking from this pack?
I like Lightning Strike. I think it's pretty flexible, pretty good card all around, and I would second. I think my top two would be that, and I really like Tragic Slip. I think those are my two.
I have kind of drafted this cube a few times and counters. And counters and blink is like a blue-white thing in this cube. And so I'm probably going to just take that Elite Skullguard. I know it's expensive, but it's a pretty strong creature for this cube and definitely a build around. So I also like Lightning Strike. That'd probably be my second pick.
Well, yeah. And absolutely. There was also the first card, right? The first card was like the Aura New Vigilance Danath.
The second one, Danath the Capuchin, is pretty good as well.
Yeah, that card seems pretty reasonable in terms of an engine if you want to go that strategy.
Yeah, if you can put counters on it or pants or anything like that, it gets pretty ridiculous. So,
but yeah, I mean, and we talked through the cards, and you can see here, like, a lot of these, part of me was kind of, I'm not going to necessarily say embarrassed, but we've talked about a lot of these cards, like, just in terms of review over the years. Like, I'm looking, one of the first cards is Herald of Anafenza, and that definitely was in my cube for a little bit.
Yeah, it was in mine too. I was trying to do a one drop with some kind of upside ? So that never ever happened. But I remember that card.
And there's pretty good, there's some good stuff in here, and I really, really, I'm gonna make the firm commitment. We're going to give one of these cubes away. I have enough. Card Kingdom happens to be my local LGS, or my LGS, I guess. But more information about that next week. It'll probably be through a Twitter contest. But I think that'd be a fun project to kind of give through the community and give one of these away for someone who probably started a cube. Is looking to start a cube.
It's a good start. It's probably a pretty good limited environment. Like I said, it's as long as everything's balanced, it can be a lot of fun, I think. And it's, like I said, it's pretty easily upgradable. So, be a good place to start.
Well, and I'm looking at the list. Again, you get your counter spells, you got mana leaks, you got unsummon, you got your big, your big bombs, Purlink, Ancient, you get some big, dumb, demons and all that stuff. That's really all you need, and more than anything, I mean, like, this is sweet. Like, if they had this product 5 years ago when I was making my cube, I would have absolutely started here. Like, this is great. So stay tuned for more information. We will do that giveaway. It will be through Twitter, so make sure to check out What's in the Box MTG, otherwise known as @WITB_MTG. I'll of course be retweeting and all that. Currently, the cube is sold out on Card Kingdom, but as the next one comes, I'll probably pick one up and advertise it on the show, and we'll have some more information. So, anyway, Going into that, you know, it's kind of our entire topic. At least for the Card Kingdom Starter Cube. I mean, like, is this something that you want to see in terms of the Cube community? You know, like, would you... So, because... in I can't talk today, but the reason I ask is I know that you actually gave away a Cube in the past. Like, you've done this before.
I have. It was only, like, 180 cards. It's a pretty good Cube. I had the Titans were, like, the headliners at the time. And I just had it as a starter Cube. I think I gave it away when I hit 500 subscribers on YouTube back when I made YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was something that I drafted. You know, it's only a 4-player draft, but it was a pretty good starting point. And the person that won it, they immediately put some of their collection and some of their buddies' collections together, and got it up to a 360 cube, and had a lot of fun with it. So it's you know, just awesome. Just getting that start. It's like I spent a lot of time. Making my cube before it ever got drafted the first time, trying to get it like exactly where I wanted it, and that was just kind of a mistake. And eventually one guy just said, just bring what you got, and we'll draft it, and then we'll tell you what's bad, and maybe we've got some stuff you need, and you know, worst cases we're gonna draft it. And so that's what we did. I sleeved everything up, we made up packs, and just started drafting. So, and then it just kind of happened pretty quick after that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and it's super funny because if you look at a lot of the seasoned cube enthusiasts, obviously yourself, Usman, White Wolf, Anthony, Matt Cranstuber, Cranny, a lot of those people, they share their lists publicly. And while the core of the lists are, you know, oftentimes going to be the same, there is such a huge influence from your playgroup. And I remember bringing in, like, the first ever time before I got in the format, printed out a proxy cube, an entire like 500 card proxy cube, and I was like, do I want to do this? And I remember playing with my friends, and the first time Moat hit the table, everyone's like, this card is dumb. Like, get rid
Why
of
is this in the cube?
Same with Armageddon and all that, and you know, and you either will learn to like them or force them to like it, or you realize that some of the cards that you enjoy, no one else enjoys.
Or even worse, nobody plays them. Like, they're like last picked, and they sit in somebody's sideboard, and they never see a play. You're like, well, this could probably be something else. It would be more, you know, more played.
Mm-hmm. And a good example that I had of that for the longest time was Gorilla Shaman. So
I
love that card, and it's certainly like fine. It's not excellent. I don't think it's terrible, but I, you know, have a powered environment, so being able to blow up boxes and one mana spells with a you know, with the gorilla is awesome, but I was the only one that ever played it. Like, people were like, this card is terrible. And I was like, well, at some point, we just got to cut it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I think, you know, depending on how competitive your playgroup is as well, it's going to have a different influence. Like, you know, there's a term often used with regard to cube talk, which is dragon cubes, where we're just going to stuff a bunch of the best stuff together and just kind of play, what is it, like Watercraft Magic or whatever they call it.
Battle Cruiser?
Yeah, Battle Cruiser Magic. You just jam, like, all your big dragons. You just see what happens after, like, turn 15. And the reality is that once you kind of create that environment, you'll see a lot of the players maybe change or play a playstyle they normally don't play. Like, even when we're in a more casual environment, my friend who, like, only plays elves reminds me a lot of you. He, like, only ever plays elves. His EDH deck was an elf deck. I saw him pilot a mono-red deck. I'm like, this is terrifying. Like, this is super weird. Those memories, to me, are what kind of really makes Cube. And
it's
awesome.
It's nothing... when you ever see a guy that knows a spiky player and loves Counterspell and Thoughtseize and just all that, and they play turn one basic Mountain Goblin Guide, you're like, okay, this is gonna be painful, this is gonna hurt, and it's gonna be over very fast, because you know, if they're playing it, they probably got the nut red deck. Or, you know, sometimes you see the guy that normally plays the aggro deck, and all of a sudden they're just trying to combo off with, you know, just whatever, it's, you know, draw all the cards and not kill theirself. You know, I don't know, like I said, it changes people's play style, and you learn a lot. And people one of the, kind of getting off topic, one of my favorite things is when somebody says, ooh, what does this card do? And they read it, and it's like, is this a real card? You know, it's like that is this an uncard or something? Like, and you're like, no, they printed that. It's not legal in any format, but yeah, it's a real card. So, I don't know.
Well, and it's kind of funny because on the flip side of that as well, I remember learning to use cards correctly. Like, I couldn't evaluate, like, you really can't evaluate cards until you've played. Like, there's a critical mass of Magic you kind of have to play before you can actually understand kind of where each card fits in the overall power level and scheme of Magic. And I remember looking at, like, Wildfire and Burning of Zingy. I was like, these cards are trash. like, why would you ever play these cards? And, you know, of course, you realize that you see, like, once you get blown out by it once, you'll never forget. And it's just super fun. Like, those environments, like, those experiences are something you kind of only ever have once, but they're incredibly memorable and just incredibly fun.
So. I know what you mean, because I think, like I said, you can read a card and kind of have some understanding of Magic, but if you don't know the other interactions with them, like, you don't, until you've seen somebody cast Armageddon, hold priority, and cast Boros Charm, you just don't know how bad that is. Like, it's bad enough if they're ahead on board casting Armageddon. It's completely different if they're ahead on board casting Armageddon and keep their lands. So, like, it was pretty over. Now it's just super over. And, like, nobody ever, you know, outside of an EDH game or something like that, like, most people have never seen that happen. So, I don't know.
Absolutely. Last thing I'll say about that, one of my favorite things ever was playing Phantasmal Image and copying a Persist creature. And this comes up sometimes, but the creature still gets Persist, but it doesn't have to come back as the same creature. You can obviously choose a different thing. And I remember, you know, like, copying Kitchen Finks, then he, like, played, and he's like, yeah, I'm playing against a mono green opponent, and he, like, you know, plays a Finks on whatever, some medium turn, I copy it, and he kills my creature, and then it comes back, and I copy the whatever the giant ramp target was, and he's like, I didn't know you could do that. I'm like, well, now you're dead.
Still, is there anything dirtier than copying Glenalindra?
Exactly.
It's pretty fun. But yeah, once somebody had that happen to them, they remember how that interaction works from then on, because nobody wants that to happen to them twice.
So, there's another podcast that came out. It is called... 2 seconds, sorry. There's another Cube podcast that came out that I was listening to that I want to put on all of our listeners by any chance if you haven't already heard of it. It is called Solely Singleton. They're on episode 5 now. They're available on the MTG Cube subreddit. And they do a lot of cool work. And you know, some of the things that they were talking about was specific card discussion. And one of the cards they talked about was actually Glenalindra. And does Glenalindra compete in the blue spot? I think it does. But the idea, if you could had to choose between Venser, Sower, and Glenalindra, what order are you ranking them in?
Glenalindra, Venser, Sower. Like, I could see a case for Venser over Glenalindra, maybe. But no, not really. Like, and Sower is still a very strong card. Like, you can, if you play Glenalindra and have any mana open, it's almost impossible for you to lose value. You can play a Venser and not have good choices, but you're still going to get, you know, you're going to at least get another draw step you wouldn't have gotten or something. You can play a Sower and do something really cool, and before you get to untap, get completely blown out. So, you know. But yeah, those are all still three really good cards.
And, you know, and they brought up... Yeah, absolutely. And they brought up the point that I don't think Glenalindra is as good in, like, a mono-blue or a blue-white control as opposed to, like, a Simic deck. Because playing Glenalindra on 4 and not having... Like, there's your shield's down, right? Like, playing Glenalindra on 4 with only 4 mana, not having anything open, is a really awkward time in a control deck when, you, obviously, a lot of the counters in Magic can be around 2 or 3 mana. But, yeah, you know, just different perspectives. Like, I, you know, it's not something I necessarily agree with, but it was good to hear someone's differing opinion. The other card I want to talk about actually is Forbid. Do you think Forbid is good enough to play in Cube? in terms of competitive, like where would you rank it in terms of the overall counter spells? Because I think it's,
well,
they brought up the point that it's not good, and I actually may agree with them. It's not terrible, but I don't think it's,
well, just it's okay,
good.
3 mana counter spells. I mean, it obviously you start with cancel, and you want something with a lot of upside. And there are quite a few choices. You got like disallow, dissipate, all the disses, right? And forbid is just no drawback. It says counter target spell. There's no if they play this or this type of spell, like negate, any of that. And being able to discard cards can be an advantage if you're in some kind of reanimator or can make it like you have Dell creatures, whatever. So it is a flexible card. It has no restrictions on the counterspell. That being said, for 3 mana, it's not really good enough to me.
Yeah,
like
I have it. Mm-hmm. Like I've been playing it for years, and as opposed to Constructed, where you're, you know, like if you can get value out of it and your entire deck is focused around it, it's great. Like you said, in Reanimator, it's great. But I find it very rarely that I'm have so much card advantage as a control player that Forbid is that good, because I really just want to end the game. Like, especially in Cube. I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of off it now, to be honest. I don't know if it'll be necessarily cut, but it's on the fence for sure. I don't... That and a couple of the older boys that are kind of, I think, coming up on their timelines. Like, Jackal Pup is another one where, like, at this point, we just have a bunch of 2/1 for 1 red creatures that don't have the drawback.
Well, in my most recent, in the cut down to 450 plus a pack or two, you know, I just recently cut some Annalines, and it was a sad day. But, you know, I'm adding 2/1 drop, 2 power white creatures that are just strictly better than it. And it's just, even I couldn't justify it, even on nostalgia's sake, something like that. And Jackal Pup is pretty much there. Like I play it over Fire Drinker Stater, which is just strictly wrong. But that's kind of why I kept it in there. Drafts my red deck anyway. It doesn't matter. Everybody talks about like Impact 2. Every time we draft my cubes, I was like, I'm just going to draft red next time. It's way open. I was like, yeah, everybody says that. Nobody ever drafts it. So like, I even tell myself that, and I don't do it. So, but yeah, like I keep it like it's Jackal Pups. Pretty much seen better days. Mm-hmm. You need a very large cube. Or some very good nostalgia behind it to justify having it in most cubes.
Yeah. So one more theoretical. I just thought of this. If there was a new Land of War, Finnhorn, Mystic, Elvish Mystic elf that came out, would you play it?
I already don't play all of them. I play Finnhorn, Land of War,
because this is on top of Bird and Noble Hierarch.
Yes,
and Jiraga in the same slot.
Like I would rather have like Elves of Deep Shadow that taps for black and gives you damage than have another 1-mana 1/1 tap
green
for
elf.
Green. Yeah, elf. So, even Avacyn's Pilgrim, I'd rather have that in my cube that taps for white than have a extra copy of the same card. Like I think, like I said, I don't think you need the 3. I think 2 is fine. And then you got your stuff like your Arbor Elf. Like you've got other variations that are different and / better in other circumstances. So, no, I probably would not play if they reprinted a 4th variation of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion because I remember, and I haven't been cubing nearly as long as a lot of the other people in the community. You know, Milo being another one. And we were talking before, we've had some really good casts. Like I've learned so much just within the cast, let alone cubing. But, I mean, you just hear stories of basically trying to find playable cards, right? 10 years ago, you were trying to find playable cards because there just wasn't, you know, like, the creatures back then were pretty, pretty bad. The spells have stayed in 2018, but a lot of, I would say probably 90% of the creatures we have are... probably within the last 5 years, 8, 6
definitely
years.
Definitely a lot
maybe?
Of them. You know, it used to be there was, you know, you had your, what, like your white 3 drops and 4 drops. Like, there was kind of some tough choices there as far as creatures go.
I'm playing Fiendslayer Paladin. Oh, gosh.
But yeah.
Get out.
Yeah, remember that? The lightsaber. The lightsaber was cool though, man. You play that. But like, I don't even play Fiend Hunter anymore. Yeah. Like, there's enough white cards that do that that I just like better. So I don't. I mean, like I said, there a lot of the creatures have just like we were talking about the other day about that Dominaria in the last cast, that Dominaria Kavu, that's a 2-mana 2/2 Vigilance Trample that kicks for 5 mana for a 5/5, and was it Kavu Titan had Trample but not Vigilance, I think, or Vigilance but not Trample? I can't remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's just, you know, it's just like there's so many strictly better creatures that's been printed in the last, like I said, like 4 or 5 years. It's like a Ravenous Chupacabra, same thing.
Well, I mean, can you imagine that card like 10 years ago? I couldn't. I don't know. Think about like if Baleful Strix was in Legends, right? Like, just like the cards, I just feel like are so pushed. And obviously, this is a little bit older, but it's awesome. And then the spells that do make it through are going to be like Mystic Confluence, Fiery Confluence, either incredibly efficient or highly flexible. Because I don't think it's, or both. I don't think we're going to get. I think Magic dies the day they, you know, make a better Lightning Bolt. But in terms of some of the other stuff, like a Braid is a very, like we talked about it before, is a very good card. You know, probably before the cast. But I mean, just as a whole, like I have been so impressed with creatures, like really combing through the list and being like, wow, like True Name Nemesis is just a dumb card, but I really like it.
It's really bad in Commander. Really good in Cube and Legacy. So, but yeah, the card's pretty good. Incidentally, now I have to get a full when I actually get some Battle Bond. There's so many good reprints of that set that are like either full for the first time or the reprint's gonna have new art or something. So it should be some good pickups there.
Yeah, absolutely. Stay tuned for our set review of that for sure. Let's go into topic number 2, which is going to be Cube Guidelines. To start off this conversation, I'm just going to pose the question, power or unpowered?
I'm going to say powered, because that's what I run. But, I mean, like, if something happened and I had to sell my set of power cards or just whatever, I've played a lot of Cube that was not powered and had just a ton of fun. Like I said, I think balance is the key, because there's always going to be a best card or a top 10 cards in the cube, no matter what you've got in it. And I think just making it, you know, fairly balanced and good gameplay. And I think you can do either one you want and still have fun. I, for one, just like the, I guess, swinginess and the big play, big term potential of a power cube.
I agree. I also play powered. We've gone through kind of different iterations, and the cube power level, I'll break it down in a second. But with regards to strictly looking at power, I enjoy that environment because I don't get to cube very often with my playgroup. And when I do, it becomes the museum effect. Like, that's really the driving factor of kind of my cube and my collection and all that. We're opening and looking at, you know, dual lands and power.
Getting
and
the nostalgia for it, yeah. I understand.
Yeah, the nostalgia is huge. That museum effect is huge, and that's what I cherish above the gameplay. We've cube drafted, you know, on Twitch and on YouTube together, and just I've played other people's cubes, which are unpowered, and I think that's a perfectly reasonable environment as well. And I remember, you know, I've also just taken power out of our drafts when we want, you know, a little bit less of a swingy environment, but I'm the same way. You know, if I'm drafting, I want to play everything. I want to see crazy stuff happen. but once again, I don't get to cube on a regular basis. So if I was probably cubing on a regular basis, I don't know that I would run power every single time. If one, because they're very valuable, but two, I do respect the idea of people really kind of, you know, wanting to play quote unquote real.
And it's like I said,
I can definitely understand that opinion.
It's an opinion that a lot of people have. Like, it's just, you get those non-games sometimes, and you know, if you're on Modo and you paid to do this draft, like, you don't want to get channel, you know, Emrakul'd Ulamog on turn one, And then you're just like, well, that wasn't magic. But like, if you're playing it in a paper draft, that happens. You're like, okay, cool. And then, you know, you shuffle up, play another game. And even if you lose, you play a third game or, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's the nostalgia factor is really there. Like, because we talked about, like, some of these cards are so strong, people think they're not real magic cards because they're not legally anything. Like, it's a card I bring in and out of the cube, Yawgmoth's Bargain, and that's a 6-mana card, but it's pretty much you win the game if you get to untap with mana because you draw your deck. You know, it's just, you know. And so there's just a bunch of cards like that. Like, even something like Mind Twist that, you know, it's legal.
Yeah, no,
it's
that
like
card
EDH
is
and stuff. But, like, well, you know, that card is just ridiculous in power level, and it doesn't feel good, but it's still kind of cool. And, like, somebody just gets your whole hand on turn three, you're like, well, that happened. And then sometimes you make a comeback from that, and that's even a better story. So.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, the comeback stories is, like, I've won one game in my entire Magic playing career after getting my opponent ultimated Karn Liberated. I've only won it once. It has happened before. Doesn't happen very often, but it's happened.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yeah. As for online, I am very, very... I have a firm ideology when it comes to online. I don't like... So I'm not an enfranchised MTGO player. I don't play Standard or Modern or anything like that. I only play Modo when the cube is up. So I'm always paying money. I'll put in, you know, whatever, 40, 50 bucks, do 7-8 drafts, whatever it is. And in that circumstance, I specifically want to play with powered or a high power leveled unpowered cube. I don't play the Pauper or anything. They're certainly great experiences, but I'm not going to pay 10, 15 bucks a draft to draft a Pauper cube. It's just not. I'm not going to do that. But with regards to power, I just want to be able to play with cards I'm never able to play
I'm
with.
Pretty much the same way.
And then with regard to the second level, the second circle of power level, I want to go and I'll propose the next question. Do you play uncards, conspiracy cards, anything kind of the wonkiness of Magic, the holiday promo cards?
I have one uncard in the main cube. It's Booster Tutor. It's a silly, powerful card. We don't get a whole, like, we don't let you up into a booster pack, or you don't get 15 cards out of a cube. We condense it down to 8 cards. You get an 8 card cube pack, whatever's left over of the non-drafted, whatever. And we've kind of got a power level on that. That's just about right, I found.
Because 15 is way too much. That. I think 15.
Oh yeah, I mean, you get 15 cube cards, you're gonna find an answer or something or a bomb. Yeah. You know, 8. You know, maybe 2 of them are lands. One of them's completely off color. One of them's a creature that's dead on board. One of them's a discard spell that you don't, you know, whatever. But yeah, 8 cards, usually you can find something pretty decent. And nobody's ever complained about that card. Most people just really like it. I used to have Cheaty Face shuffled in with the basic lands. And if you got it out of the basic lands and didn't say anything, like, you don't say, hey, what is this doing in here? Fine, put it in your deck. And if you get it on the table, it's fair game. That's fine. We tried that for a while. But then everybody started looking for
awesome.
It, so I had
that's
to. You know, I pulled it out for a while, and I've got a separate package of. I've got two different packages. I've got the conspiracies, like, you know, Sovereign's Realm, Hymn of the Wild, Power Play, those like that. You know, those. I've got 8 of
World
those,
Myth.
And, like, basically we could, you know, turn them all upside, turn them all face down, and let everybody draw one, and then you draft around that. Problem is, World Knit and more so Sovereign's Realm are just busted. Like, so the people that get those, you know, usually do better. And then I've got another little package that has the Draft Matters cards, like Agent of Acquisitions and Lore Seeker, and I'll throw those in the draft sometime because they're a lot of fun. And I think I've only got a couple of the colored ones, like there's a red Chimera that does cool things, but yeah, stuff like that. We do that sometimes.
I think Cogwork Librarian is 100% should be in every cube. It's a perfect power level. I don't think it breaks anything. It adds a little bit of spice to the draft if it gets opened in the first pack. I think that standalone, in my opinion, should be in every single cube. If you're running, it's a common as well. You put it everywhere because it provides such an interesting dynamic.
My three favorite are Cogwort Librarians, probably one or two. Lore Seeker, because I like adding packs to the draft, and then it goes back the it's, everybody gets an extra first pick or extra second pick. It's pretty good. And then my other one I really like is Agent of Acquisitions, because how many times have somebody said, "Oh, I wish I could just take this whole pack"? Well, now you can. You just turn that in, you get the whole pack. So it's
Yep, those are the exact three I love. In
I
my
usually run those if everybody's even remotely cool with it. Like, yeah, we're gonna jam these in here and see what they do. I try to take them out of my cube tutor, because when you open one up on a cube tutor draft, it's just sad, because like I don't get to do any of the things, so why would I take this? But anyway, that's beside the point.
No, it's so yeah, just talking about those I think are the most respectable power level in terms of design and function. They're not going to break anything. I have heard arguments against Lore Seeker, because if you're looking at it through a real competitive lens, you should probably first pick it above anything that's not power or anything that's not like tier 1 or 1.5, just because you get another first pick. But in reality, I've kind of found it to kind of really go like third or fourth, because it's the stuff that's in the pack is just, there's a lot of good cards in Cube. But those three, Agent of Acquisitions also is like Agent of Acquisitions is like the card when you
It
don't like
happened
shuffle
before.
the
Something
cube, right?
pretty similar to
The
that.
whole
Like, they
mono
got
red deck is like just one
Kiki,
pack.
Deceiver, and Pestermite from the person that drafted that deck, like last time we had the cube draft, and I haven't, shuffled it and redone and everything. They're like, okay, well, I guess I'm getting these three. Good. And whatever chapter is in there, they don't care, because they got three combo pieces in one pack. I've been known to do that with a storm pack that looked good, so.
And then as for the other cards, I also play Booster Tutor. I think that's fine. You have to find, you're right. For a while I was like opening normal packs. Like I just had packs with me, and I'm like, this isn't even good. And then I had the idea, I was like, well, what if I like get a bunch of old packs, and you can like open like a Mirrodin pack or something. It was still not good. So we just do cube packs. I don't even know why I did that in the first place. And we did 10, and I think 10 is probably still a little too strong. But that's great. And then I have a what I call I stole this from White Wolf, so shout out to him. But the holiday expansion, where I have the world
Yeah,
knits, all
gifts
the crazy
given's
stuff like
a
that,
silly card,
gifts
like
given,
obviously, but yeah,
not gifts ungiven, but gifts
it's real
given, the holiday
backbreaking, yeah.
promo. Really dumb. And Scheherazade, or Scheherazade, whatever that is, the sub-game card. You can only use it once. You can't use it every single round. You can use it once, and you can play it. But it doesn't really work, because you have to leave the. So basically, it starts a sub-game within the game, and you have to leave all your previous cards, including your hand, if I understand right, and then just start anew. But in a 40-card environment, you have like 10 cards. So you just kind of like move to the seat next to you and play a new one with that doesn't ever really work, but it's a fun effect. I don't know, people really like it, but that's my thing. That isn't that, that's when Magic gets dumb, right? Like World Knit is just kind of dumb. When you play Pokemon, you just go catch them all kind of stuff. Same with Sovereign's Realm. Magic gets kind of silly there, but. As a holiday special and kind of as the side stuff just to make it spicy, they're really it's a good time and it's a real memorable environment. But I found that they can get old pretty quick, because they are even more swingy. Like they're going to be even more swingy than power. But yeah.
And I had a thread on Twitter a while back about like stipulation drafts, and that's another way you can kind of keep your cube environment is like get say you've got eight people drafting, six people drafting, whatever. You get like that many plus a couple more stipulations. You fold them up, put them in a hat. Everybody draws out, and only they see them, and you draft around that. And it just kind of gives. It's just a little bit different. Just something like that can spice it up. There's some really fun ones that was in the thread. And of course, I'm blanking on most of them now. Like one would be like you only got so many words could be in the title. Like say they all have to be wearing hats. Just it can be something really specific or something silly. But yeah, there's a bunch of different things you can have for that, for the draft portion. You know, a lot of people, that's their favorite part is the draft portion. So,
yeah, mine is, actually. I enjoy drafting more than... And in fact, I don't know why, but I enjoy drafting so much more that if I'm drafting in a small group, we'll play like one or two rounds and just draft again. Like, we won't even play the whole thing through.
Like, you've always got that one person that's like 2-0 and hasn't dropped a game. They're like, no, I want to play the round. And I'm like, man, your deck's good. We know your deck's good. It's fine. It's fine. But, you know, I've been that person a couple times, but not too often. I'm just like, let's just draft again and do it again. But,
And then the next power level that I have written down is basically the higher power level artifacts. And this is what was taken out of the Legacy Cube. We're going to give you your Grim Monoliths, essentially your Talarian Academy, your Mishra's Workshop. Not quite power, but pretty crazy. And I think that is the big line to draw with regards to unpowered. Because obviously you're not going to play power, you're not going to play any of the crazy draft matters on kind of level cards. But you get to, you know, put your environment and what you take and what you leave with regards to artifacts is going to really, you know, have a big effect on your environment. So, Grim Monoliths of the world. I forgot I also play Chaos Orb in that holiday pack. I'm just looking at my list. Mana Vaults, those kinds of things. I already know how you feel, but what are your kind of thoughts?
Okay, I disappoint some people. Because my Chaos Orb is basically colorless Vindicate, and I did.
Mm-hmm. You have a
I actually
right?
got as a throw-in extra on a trade. I had an unlimited one for a while, which at the time it was worth like $80, which was crazy in itself. The trade was like, you know, $300-$400 at the time, and anyway, so I had it in the cube for a while, and when I was picking up my collection edition power. I came across an altered collector's edition Chaos Orb on eBay, and it went for super cheap, like it was way less than $100. And at this point, the limited version was like $250, something like that. And so I picked it up super cheap, and then I got to GP Louisville last January, I think would have been what it was. And I had all my power except for the trying to get a Lotus. And one vendor in the room had a collector's edition Lotus that was played, of course. And I was able to go buy list my unlimited Chaos Orb to somebody, and like I had like a couple fetch land that I wasn't using, and took that money, went to the other vendor and got the Lotus. So I don't have a $800-$900 unlimited Chaos Orb, but I roughly paid like $300 for about $300 for that collector's edition Lotus, which now is worth a fair amount more. So, you know, it all works out. But yeah, no, that card, like I said, in my queue, it's colorless Vindicate. You just do it on layaway, or you can do it all at once, whatever, but you say, yeah, destroy that thing, and that's what you do.
Yeah.
When Jeremy or Zimmet drafts it, he always drops it from the table. So, since it is the altered collector's edition, it's not as big a deal. If random people start trying to flip, you know, the other one, but yeah, it's fine. Either way they want to run it, it's whatever. It's just if you play it, people can't like spread their cards out and all that if you're going to drop it.
No, for sure. One of my favorite memories about Chaos Orb was my friend. The first time I did it, my friend didn't realize you have to destroy it after you use the effect.
So he just thought, do it over and over?
He did it five times in a row, but he missed four of the throws. So it wasn't even good. But I mean, I'm like, you broke the heck out of that card. Like, holy cow, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know why more people don't play this card. It seems fun.
Yeah. But sorry, I went in a random hole of Chaos Orb, but like, just the fast mana. Like, should Sol Ring be in an unpowered cube?
Probably not. At the same time, like I said, that's my argument. I ran it in my cube before I had power, but at the same time, I had Mana Vault, Mana Crypt, Grim Monolith. Like I say, there's always going to be a best card. There's always going to be a top 10 cards. Granted, without power, like I said, I still had Talarian Academy, Mind Twist, stuff like that. Mana Drain, I had Mana Drain at the time. You know, yes, Sol Ring was a step above most of the cards, but, you know, I still had it in there. Like, I can totally see not playing it. But as long as you have a good number of very powerful, like, vintage-level cards, If you don't have power, I can see you playing it. If you don't want to, hey, fine, that's fine. Just it's all about having that somewhat as much balance as you can get. So, sound like a broken record, but you know, it's kind of the key, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it summarizes it very well. I mean, that's it. So, the next thing I want to talk about with regards to cube guidelines is the number of planeswalkers that you allow in each color / each guild. Because this goes pretty deep. Because my list is not optimized at this moment. I'll update it before the cast goes out. And with that said, actually, what is your cube tutor cube number?
It is 1759. I know that because I'm currently editing. I'm down to red. I've got like two more sections to go to get down. But yeah, it's 1759. I have cut a lot of planeswalkers recently. Still, there's quite a few. So I try not to have like green. Pretty much green has been the hardest color, and reverse in a different kind of hard way, black. Because, you know, for the longest time, black didn't have, they only had one good black planeswalker. Whereas green had like six playable green planeswalkers. So, you know, they keep printing nisses. And then they went printed Frailes and Commander. That was, it's a pretty playable card even in Vintage Cube, I think. So, where do you like, I know some people have like two a color. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, that's all you get. And I can't do that, but I've been trying to cut it back a little bit more.
I would like to have three, but the reality is I don't. it's more like four, and green right now has way too many. I wish I had optimized my list before we make this so I could have made a decision. But I try to do at least one per guild, and then three per color, sometimes four. You know how it goes, but. Boros has a Johnny Vengeance and Nahiri, just because I just think they're the best two cards in Boros.
Pretty arguable in that. Yeah, that's, you can make an argument for that, sure.
How about yourself?
Well, I was trying to, like I said, I had it on the edit page, but like you said, like Nahiri and Ajani is a good example. And for like I said, a long time, I didn't want to have it the same number for each one, because there was four good blue ones at the time I was trying to run. But there's no way I can find four black planeswalkers to run. It's just crazy. You know, then you're playing like Sarn Markov, and I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying he's never won a cube game, but I mean, come on. He's six men. And anyway.
I think, I don't think Ovnik's list is terrible.
No, it's not. It's either. Not. It's a very generic black five mana planeswalker, but like, I would run, like, right now, to give you an idea, in white, I have five. This is on the cut down list. I have five white planeswalkers. I've got Gideon, three mana Gideon, four mana Elspeth, Gideon, the Ally of Zendikar. Like I said, four mana Gideon, cause nobody thinks I'm running Champion of Justice. I mean, there's no better. And then,
is that,
you know,
the worst planeswalker in Magic? I think he. Like,
no, no. He's up there. Probably top 10 worst, probably. There's, of course, Tybalt. There's Living Guild Pact.
Living Guild Pact.
It's pretty bad.
Well, there's, I'm not counting like the new, there's like the new Chinese promo.
Yeah, I don't
ones,
know about those.
Exclusive.
Those look pretty bad. You know, there's also the Planeswalker deck, Planeswalkers. You know, most of those are pretty, like, they're six and seven mana, and they're just not made for one-on-one, any kind of competitive anything. But, Gidengira and Elspeth's the champion. So those are my, you know, five white Planeswalkers. No Champion of Justice. And then black, I've got Lily LaVeil, Lily the Last Hope. I cut Vess, I cut Obnixilis. You know, there's just other black cards. I'm trying to get it down to 55 per color, and there's just other cards I wanted to play over those. Red's another one that's getting a lot. There's a lot of good red planeswalkers now. Mm-hmm. Not as many as green.
Mm-hmm. Well, Torch of Defiance is absurd. I think Torch of Defiance is like, I think one of the best just red cards, even in a powered environment, because it still gives you mana, and it just does everything well. Like, it just does everything you would want.
Well, I mean, it's got two pluses and a minus that, you know, protects itself. So, yeah.
Flame
so
Tongue something?
It's just a very, it's like pretty much the opposite of Jai Ballard. It's a very balanced red card. it does red things. Like Jai Battler does red things that nobody wants to. Yeah. But anyway, my mind's jumping around with Planeswalkers. But that artist proof I picked up, Dreddy Ingenious Iconoclast, I love that card, and it's the red black Planeswalker we deserve, I guess. So, yeah. Yeah.
No, that card is absurd. That card is so good. I need to get that. I don't have. It's on my list. It's on my short list because the foils are like $70. But that card is awesome. It's interesting. So I'm looking at your list now. Ashiok versus Tezzeret. Now I don't think you're going to cut Tezzeret.
No, I didn't cut. Tezzeret. I think I've updated it already. Now, okay. Let me say this. I was trying to cut it down to 4 per guild. But then at the end, I had some like Wedge and Shard cards. Like I have Bantamia, which I like as a card. It's if you can cast it, it's super strong. And I got like Nicol Bolas and Leovold and Sea Drino. But I didn't have something for every. I didn't want 10 of those. So I wound up having like 5 3-color cards. And then I had a card like Deathrite Shaman, which is technically Golgari, but it could just be black or it could just be green. So I kind of had that off that and Figure of Destiny kind of off to the side. And it's like, yeah, they're multicolored, but they're not really. So me trying to get an even number, I was like, well, that gives me three slots for, you know, something else. And what I wound up doing, Rakdos Cackler. That was the other one-mana hybrid. So it gave me 2 shots. And me being the Esper Mage, I gave Azorius an extra card. And Demir an extra card, then I don't care. It's okay. So it's my cube. So...
When you're looking at like designing, are you when you pick the you know five say you allocate 5 slots per guild, are you looking to make each individual card support a different archetype or a slightly different strategy? Or are you looking for flexibility? Or are you prioritizing planeswalkers? You know what are your kind of guidelines or general gist when you're looking at cutting cards?
For guilds, I look basically at power level. Like just the overall power level, if it's the most powerful card, like for Azorius, we'll just say Azorius. To me, the most powerful Azorius card is Supreme Verdict. There's some arguments for other cards, but you know when you just really want to wrath board, that's gonna do it every single time. I guess that could be anyway. That's the best wrath to me, 4 mana wrath. But then, like say, go down to Mir. Tezzeret, Agent Bolas, not the most powerful Demir card. I would argue that it would be Baleful Strix, maybe.
Ashiok also with the 40-card format is pretty good.
Ashiok, yeah, because you can turn 3 Ashiok somebody and they just can't win. But then there's cards in Demir. My extra card I added just because I wanted to was Psychotog. Because not many people draft it. Not many people really think it's good because they haven't played with it, but occasionally somebody gets to play it with upheaval, and that's when the cube stories come out. So, you know, stuff like Psychotog that's really good in the deck that wants it, and, you know, it's still okay. You know, it's never going to, if you're playing blue-black, it's never a bad card. It does kind of what you want it to do. And then, you know, you got a card like Tezzeret that, you know, it's a build around. It can be really powerful in an artifact deck. But pretty much when I look at guilds, I go power level. Then, you know, kind of, is this a art type enabler that I'm trying to support? Or if it's just something that, like you said, that's very flexible, there's some of the, let me look at something else down through here. Like Fire Ice. And is it like, that's just a really flexible card. It almost always does what you want to do. You could run, is it Charm? Or you can run both, whatever. But, any card like that. You know, if you got a slot, probably run them. I've cut some very good multicolor cards recently just for size sake. But, yeah, pretty much it goes power, archetype, flexibility.
You know, and I am pretty similar to you as well. I do have a couple of pet cards. Like, I don't know if Edric is still kind of really competitive in terms of that slot. There's, you know, Simic, it's all right. It's not great. It's not terrible. I think Mystic Stake is kind of bad, but maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
Both those cards I kept. I can see you cutting them for other Simic cards, but like I cut Cooling Oracle. I cut Trigon Predator, because I've got a lot of ways to blow up artifacts and enchantments, and like Trigon Predator, well, I think it's a pretty strong card, is another of those cards that just like never made it, like the blue-green deck was never playing it for some reason. Like they might side it in, yeah. But usually they just play Rexage, you know, just do the one-time blow it up. Because I very rarely hit somebody with a Trigon Predator more than once, and it matter. But yeah, so Simic in particular, I think Edric still is a pretty strong card. And of course, it's your favorite card, Shardless Agent. I've seen people that don't run that, and I think that's just a mistake.
Oh yeah,
but it just checks all the boxes.
I think the card has too much value. Like, it's definitely, it's just yeah. Card's awesome, and you know, and Izzet is super interesting, right? Because I love Keranos. A lot of people don't play Keranos because it's such a high end. I mean, you know, it kind of costs 5 mana. Same thing with Purphoros. Not everyone's on it. Kind of takes a little bit of extra effort. But I just think Keranos is like one of the sickest cards ever made. But I could be crazy. Who knows?
No, I mean, I'm on the Keranos train too. You know, I always have been. Like until they printed Dak Faden, it. I mean, I still think it's the second best Izzet card. I like Dak Faden in a powered cube anyway. But yeah, like forever, Izzet didn't have anything. Like they had Fire Ice, Electrolyze is like kind of good spells, whatever, you know, kind of draw cards. But and then all of a sudden it goes.
And then you'd have like your like what is it, those like Goblin Razor Tail weird pingers and Wee Dragonauts or some stuff like that. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you got like Ral Zeric.
Yeah,
which,
well, yeah, now
you know,
certain, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but like even then, like when Ral Zeric came out, like he was a slam include in like every Izzet section because it was just so starved for cards. There's cards like Dax Duplicate, which I played before and been supremely happy with. It's a very good clone effect. I cut it when I cut my section down, but like I wouldn't fault anybody for playing that card. Like I said, we talk about Dak Faden, Keranos. I've seen people play other more recent blue-red cards. Just there's a Drake, Enigma Drake. It's kind of like a Spells Matters card. But yeah, like the power level of some guilds has went crazy in the last few years. And then you've got one like Selesnya, which I used to think was probably the most stacked guild. And it's still very, like, you've got a lot of good choices, but compared to some of the other guilds, I don't think the top is not as high as some of the other guilds, I don't think, as it used to be.
No, it's not. Their Planeswalker also sucks.
They have a Planeswalker?
Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah,
Johnny.
No, I've actually had him in my cube. He got relegated to Atraxa after about 3 cube drafts. I'm like, yeah, this guy's not going to get done. Because you know what happened? Somebody got 100 life. You know what somebody did? They brain freezed him out and said, nice life total. There you go. So, anyway, that card's not good.
Like Dryad Militant or Dryad.
Well, see, White Wolf runs that. Good. And I'm just like, and he doesn't run. He doesn't run Mirari's Wake, I think. And Mirari's Wake isn't what it used
to
be.
I think he brings it in and out.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he brings it in.
Like his most recent list was like, he didn't have it. Let me see what else is it. Of course, his sections are super tight. Like he counts a Signet, and he counts all the lands, and he only runs 8. So, but he's got at least 4 dual lands, or fetch lands, or whatever the color, the Signet. So that's 5 right there. So he only runs 3 slots. But like I said, one of his Selesnya cards is Dryad Militant. He runs Dryad Militant, Kitchen Finks, and his third, like, whatever option is Horizon Canopy. He actually runs 5 dual-type lands for Selesnya. So that should tell you that guild is not what it used to be.
Yeah. I love Voice of Resurgence. Mm-hmm. I think there are games in which it's just crazy. But it's not... it's good, but... I don't know. For each guild I run a fetch land, a shock land, a dual land, and then a utility land. So Horizon Canopy happens to be the one for green white for me. But other ones will have the man land, like, you know, green red obviously is Raging Ravine. Blackcleave Cliffs is my red black land because I think red and black oftentimes want to have that, especially red. Creeping Tar Pit.
Yeah, I definitely think if I could do anything, I would swap out my Lava Crawl Reaches for Black Cleave Cliffs. But, you know, Jun got real big and muttered, and it cost $1 billion now. So, yeah, I'm going to reprint that card. But, yeah, that's definitely a pick I would suggest a lot of people make, is like mixing the fast lands with the man lands aren't necessarily good.
Yeah, Battlefield Forge. I need to probably change this to the new one. I haven't updated the list since the red white duo land or whatever it's called, Buddy Land, came
Yeah,
out.
the fast
Yeah,
land.
Fast
Yeah.
Land, sorry. But yeah, I played Battlefield Forge because Needle Spires is just not better than Battlefield Forge in red white aggressive decks, in my opinion. I
No,
just don't think it's that good
you're absolutely right.
for the slot.
And even something like, now the Shambling Vents is the one I'm kind of torn on, because I like the Concealed Courtyards in a black-white deck, because, you know, black-white's got real restrictive color, you know, cost, double white, double black, so having to untap dual land in the first couple turns is big. And but that man land's pretty good. The other one I would say that would probably rather have the fast land would be, I'd rather have Blooming Marsh over the, was it Hissing Quagmire? It's really close, but I think if I was going to mix them up, I'd probably go
Yeah,
that way.
probably.
It's, you know, but yeah, like you're saying, like, you know, having fetch, dual shock, some combination of man land, fast land, yeah, that's pretty good.
That's non-negotiable, right? Like, I don't know anyone that doesn't run those. And I mean, unless you don't like the only reason you wouldn't play those is if you specifically don't want that. It's not, you know, there's nothing more optimal. Like, it's pretty obvious. I don't think we need to break it down, but you know, I'm trying to think if there's a, am I missing anything in terms of land? I mean, I guess, so then the next question is Signets. I don't know anyone who runs a Cloustone. That'd be not good. Do you count Signets as that, or do you count it as artifact? Do you play Signets?
I play all 10. I put them in the artifact section, and, you know, yes, it kind of makes some of the green ramp and fixing a little worse, but I really try and push my artifact decks. And people still draft green ramp decks. Like, I've never seen somebody pass a Rathalos or a Gaia's Cradle when they were in green for a Signet. So, you know,
Oh,
whatever.
don't talk to me about that card. Guy's
That's crazy.
Cradle.
I've got two regular ones I want to trade for a Judge promo if anybody needs to.
If anyone has a Judge promo, you want to get rid of it within the next month, hit me up. We can talk. Yeah.
Yeah, card's ridiculous now. So, anyway.
All right, well, I think that's enough for today. We went through so much. The next episode will be the Battlebond set review set. That set seems, I can't tell if that set is excellent or terrible. I'm gonna lean on the side of excellent because it seems awesome, at least for Cube, strictly speaking for Cube. I really love those supplemental sets because you get to bypass standard and actually print stuff that's interesting, because you don't have to look at it for 2 years. But I think it'll be good.
Yeah, there's definitely some cards that I've heard people have already tried in their cubes that have been real good results. A couple of needed reprints, a couple first-time foils. So the set overall, is, I think, it's going to be pretty good for cube owners.
All right, so wrapping up, Twitter's YouTube. Are you working on any YouTube projects? Anything like that?
I wish. I keep saying I'm going to make videos, and I just don't. I might do a deck tech, but every time I try and do one, I think about the good ones I see, and then I watch mine, and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to put this out at all. So, I think I'll just stick to, like, taking pictures of my cards laid out and posting them on Twitter, and just that'd be that. But yeah, my Twitter, I do post a lot of pack one pick ones on that. I will probably, like we said, move that over to the What's in the Box account, but I'm sure I'll retweet it for that. So yeah, be on the lookout for those. My personal.
What is your cube thing again?
Uh,
Your
my
cube number?
my cube number on Cube Tutor is 1759. So I was in there pretty early comparatively to some of the new numbers. Not like White Wolf, who's like, I think, 170. But anyway, yes, yeah, so my Cube Tutor's 1759. It should be updated by the time this comes out, so please feel free to go in there and check it out, draft it, whatever. If you have any questions, hit me up on Twitter, which is the Quad Nines, all spelled out. If I do make a YouTube video, it'll be Quad, the number 9S, is my YouTube page, and you know, that's about it. If I'm not doing one of those things, I'll probably be playing Overwatch or something.
All right, everyone, you can find me at Zakeel Gordon on Twitter and on YouTube. I was trying to change my Twitter name to just Zakeel, but someone took it and hasn't tweeted since, like, 2009. So I'm going to hope maybe I can, like, be like, hey, this guy, you know, ban, get rid of this guy. My next YouTube video is going to be a how-to guide in terms of how to grind Magic cards. So value grinding, how to value grind Magic the Gathering cards. And it's going to talk about the process in which, kind of pick up off my last video, how I converted 5-cent cards into 10-cent cards, into dollar cards, and all the way up to, in that case, a Beta Lotus. But it'll be just be a nice how-to guide for people out there trying to consolidate their collection. I've put a lot of time and work into it. It'll be out later this week. currently grinding a couple of my friends' collections, just grinding up to dual lands, because that's what, I guess, just where you need to be these days. Well, I mean, I'll probably always have had to be in dual lands, but it'll be fun. So anyone out there, stay tuned. That'll be up hopefully within the next week. I'm trying to aim for maybe Friday. If not, then probably the weekend. And then other than that, Twitter, you can find me on there. And then don't forget our new podcast Twitter, which is WITB_MTG. Both Drew and I will probably be retweeting and using it fairly often. And we'll have some status about the Card Kingdom Cube giveaway later. It'll probably be in probably another month once the stuff gets restocked and I can make it downtown to go pick up one. But anyway, thank you so much for watching, guys. Anything else pressing? I'm trying to think if there's anything else we forgot to talk about.
Real quick, nothing long. When I did get to draft my cube the week after the Dominaria thing, had a great deck. It was just what I like to draft. It was strong, and I only lost two games. It was in the first round. I got beat 2-1 by the 47-card special that played both Kithion, Isumaru, and Karn, and what was the some other 8-mana card. So yeah, that was their deck. And
Karn,
yes, Karn Liberated, not 4-mana Karn. Karn Liberated, and I think Elspeth's Sun Champion, and was splashing a double colored card in there. And it was just like they drew. What's it? They drew the two games. Like one game, I just crushed them because they played a 47 card deck with that range of stuff. And then the next game, they just had one drop into Sword of War and Peace into Hit Me. And they had Colonnade. And eventually they drew their island so they could activate it. And then they had enough mana because they were playing Gilded Lotus in their Kithion Isumaru deck. So that happened like literally two games in a row, which seems impossible, but it happened. So it still was a good story. It was the guy had never drafted a cube before, so he had a real good time. He was a good guy. His deck was just, sometimes you get beat by that, but it's still.
It keeps you honest.
A bad day drafting cube is still better than most days. So hope everybody has a good one and gets to draft all they want.
Yeah, we'll leave it off that. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Once again, we will see you soon, and that's it. Anyway, see you. All right, well, kind of rusty, but that was good. We'll be right back.